now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you, and more importantly, to remember who you are. In other words, as I keep sharing at the beginning of these broadcasts, you know, don't go searching for something you already are. You know, discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me or leave me your comments about today's show, just invite you to visit that website there. It's www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. It's bbsradio.com/reclaimingauthenticity. Okay, there we go. Knew I would get it out. And if you would like to also to be part of the show this evening, I invite you to call in. It's that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls in the show's second half tonight. Well, welcome this evening. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Tonight's show is a very special one. We're going to be talking about tea and teacups, or coffee and coffee cups. More importantly, the cup itself. So I've labeled this broadcast Tangible Holiness, Looking Inside the Teacup. And there's a lot more that goes into that, as I'll be sharing later on in the show. But just considering, you know, how you hold your coffee cup or how you hold your teacup. And just the fact that our coffee cups and teacups can hold hot liquids and cold liquids and lukewarm liquids, and that's what it's designed for. And how that often parallels what we hold within ourselves. You know, we are the container, but yet we can hold often what I like to call dichotomous emotions, you know, very strong emotions. Like we can hold anger, and yet we can also hold joy. We can hold on to bitterness, and in other times we can hold forgiveness, you know. So it just seems like, you know, how do we make sense of what we hold at the same time in ourselves? But the lesson is right inside looking at the teacup, or looking inside the teacup. And just in case you can't spend the entire hour with me tonight, these podcasts are podcasts. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and you can just pull up the show that you had missed and just go on the website. You'll see the archive button there, and you can pull up any one that you may have missed and just listen to ones that might spark an interest in you. And I just want to say, for those who might be tuning in for the first time tonight, thank you. I really appreciate the audience is always changing. The audience is always growing. And I always like to ask at the beginning that you'll just indulge me for a few moments here, just to share with people who might be tuning in for the very first time. I'd just like to share with new listeners two deep-seated beliefs that have helped shape my outlook on reclaiming our authentic selves as souls. In fact, this same philosophy is what I share with my clients regarding how and how I work with them and the way that I do. And the first one is that I truly believe that people have the answers within themselves, because you know what kind of life you want to live, and you know how you feel, and you know what brings you peace and joy and hope and happiness and contentment, and you know what doesn't. And sometimes this means that, you know, we get tripped up because we just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, something traumatic happens to us, or we thought that perhaps we may have dealt with an experience from our past, only to discover later on that there are some very specific unresolved issues that keep popping up again and again, or we find that we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And now we have to go back and go deeper into our healing. Well, all is not lost when that happens. That's actually being in a very good place, coming to that realization that we need to go back and do a little just deeper inner work. And as I shared, the famous poet and writer, Ralph Waldo Emerson, is kind of on board with this because he once says, what lies behind us and what lies before us, these are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Well, that's the first deep-seated belief that I have. The second one is that I truly believe that everybody comes into this world with what they already need in this life, in terms of their giftedness, in terms of their talents, in terms of their skills and graces and their personalities and so forth. Or in other words, the very best parts of who you are, as well as the potential for knowing yourself as a soul. Because everything in our lives has at some measure this potential to help us discover who we are as an eternal and vast soul. Or maybe to borrow a line from Disney's Lion King, remember who you are. Not just remember what you're going to be, but remember who you are and that discovery and how everything that we brought into this world, the very best of ourselves and the goodness and so forth, well, do these have a way of kind of helping us remember who we are? I think they do. I think they do. Because you see, even though we may have had some pretty awful and traumatic experiences, we may tend to stop believing that indeed we came into this world full of value and dignity and worth, as well as, if depending on what we have gone through, something horrific, we may feel as though we need to hide our giftedness or our strengths or our skills so that other people will not exploit these. Well, either way, we end up going through life thinking from or speaking from and living from a place of woundedness instead of from a place of healing and grace and love and peace and wholeness and fully embrace who we truly are. And, a key aspect to reclaiming our authenticity is for us to realize that all of our experiences are first and foremost taken in through our five senses. Sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. And as powerful as we believe these senses are, and they are powerful, they are limited. But how often do we use our five senses as empirical evidence, let's say, the things that we can measure? And these things are often interpreted by our mind. So as a result, let's say that we have a certain experience and we end up convincing ourselves that, well, since I could see it, then it must be true. Seeing is believing. All right. How many of you heard that one? Or if we could hear something, well, then that must be true. And if we can touch something, if we can hold it in our hands, well, then that must be true. As well as other sensory related experience that we believe to be the end all be all truth. However, these sensory perceptions that we have are limited. Because what is taken in and through the brain, mind comes in and it interprets what we have seen and heard and tasted and touched and smelled, which is based on our limited experiences. The mind has a job to do. It comes in and it interprets. It says, this is a good smell. This is a bad smell. This is a good experience. This is a not so good experience and so forth. However, again, that's not the end all be all of truth, because when the mind comes in and it interprets what we take in through our senses and starts to interpret based on its limited experiences, we often don't realize that the holiest and most transformative experiences in our lives ultimately touch the soul. So again, don't go off searching for something you already have. Discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. And yet, it is hard for us to grasp the reality that we existed before taking on, the physical. We're taking on a body that gives form to our formless souls. And as a result, we don't quite yet know ourselves as eternal and vast souls, you know, because we often, again, limit ourselves to settling for the form, you know, that empirical evidence, that which we can measure, that which we can see, that which we can feel, that which we can taste or touch or whatever. Okay. And as a result, we often give up exploring higher truths because, well, really, how can you measure the soul? I mean, can you measure the soul with a bathroom scale or a radar device and how fast it travels? Or can you measure the soul's length through a tape measure? No. You know, those things, those measurements, those assessments, those devices are just not meant to measure things that are just so vast and eternal, like the soul. In fact, the soul is boundless, and it is eternal, and therefore its truths are experienced from life to life and soul to soul. Well, as I shared in the last broadcast, a quote from my teacher, Swami Paramanand, from the Akhand Paradham Ashram in Haridwar, India. And he writes, you know, this ocean of worldly existence, in other words, these experiences through our five senses, we can cross this ocean very easily, having first climbed highest mountains or the deepest waters, and even going through the fire, all metaphors here. And there is nothing but pure consciousness, so I'm up to the mountain. However, the problem is that we don't leave our old ways of thinking and seeing behind. We kind of think that, well, those things can come along for the ride. The mind can come along for the ride. It's like, no, 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 no. Mind is limited, has a purpose. But does it have a purpose in terms of helping us discover who we are? Yes. But again, it's not the end-all be-all of who we are as a soul. And this is basically what reclaiming authenticity is all about. In fact, I really love to just sum up reclaiming authenticity in one word, namaste, which, when roughly translated, means that when I can embrace myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet the lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to embrace it in yourself. You know, the fact that I see it myself as that soul of light, I can see it in you. And it is quite thrilling when a lot of people get together and they realize themselves as those souls of light, and they start to see others as souls of light. And you talk about transformation. Transformation just is limitless. It's vast. And, you know, this integration of embracing who we truly are is just simply not based on sheer knowledge, okay? But rather a transformation that results from a direct realization and a direct experience of the Spirit of God. Because once this transformation occurs, it will inevitably bring us back into contact with our human relationships. And that's not wishful thinking here, folks. It's a fact of how transformation needs to be lived out. Okay, because we have this realization that we are eternal souls here on earth. But what does that look like on a Wednesday night? And how do we live this out on a Saturday morning, let alone a Sunday afternoon? But again, it brings us into relationships, because that is where the work continues. Because when you think about it, relationships are where we first need to begin healing ourselves and others, as we let go of these old ways of understanding ourselves, and as a result, taking on a new identity. We cannot have the full realization of who we are as souls and yet remain unaffected by these old wounds that we carry around. I mean, but the human relationships are where we experience first our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds. And yet, we can discover our greatest healing, our greatest strength, our greatest peace, our greatest sense of forgiveness, and our greatest depth of love through healthier relationships. And the relationships we need to begin with and begin this transformation are definitely within our own families or among coworkers, and especially with our friends. Because, you know, when we transform, we also are transforming others by our presence, grace, and understanding on some level. And we're not going to understand ourselves the same after undergoing a direct realization of who we are as a soul. I mean, that transformation, it shakes us up. We're never going to see ourselves the same way. You know, we're never going to look at other people the same way, because forgiveness and kindness and compassion all begins with how we treat ourselves. Because whenever we are compassionate with ourselves, we can certainly then be more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving with ourselves, we can certainly then be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves and what we have gone through, because those experiences, any experience, has brought us to this very moment, we then discover how this gratitude opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So, all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. But, you know, going back to the woundedness that we experience in relationships, you know, whether the wounding was intentional or accidental, it is what we do afterward. Once we have been wounded, or let's be honest, maybe we have been the ones who have wounded another person, that it's what we do afterward that will either reinforce these wounds or find a way to be healed and free from those burdens. So this is what it means to let go of the old ways of thinking and understanding ourselves. It brings us back to forgiveness. It brings us back to walking in gratitude. It brings us back to the depth of love. But the common denominator in all of those three things are relationships. Well, in the Korean language, there is a very interesting word, kind of a haunting word, called han, H-A-N, han, which basically means the deep wounds of its victims. So in other words, when a person's deep wounds are not healed, the wounds then become what's often referred to as like a vortex of troubled waters that's always circulating. It's always being intertwined with a person's instinct for survival and very much associated with fear. You know, how in the world am I ever going to heal with this or heal from this? You know, and I don't want anybody to get close to my wounds, so therefore I'm going to lash out irrationally, or I'm going to lash out in anger, or I'm going to hurt others before they hurt me. All distortions, but it all points to the fact that our wounds have not been healed. And also, han means, on a deeper level, a rupture of the soul, you know, where there's kind of this internalized memory of being a victim that occurs over and over again and again. So, Knight, let's talk about the wisdom of one of life's just ironies of how we hold emotional pain and sorrow, as well as how we hold profound joy and peace in our hearts. Much in the same way, a teacup holds not just tea, but also holds many stories of our heartbreak, loss, love, and bliss. So, first and foremost, what is your favorite kind of tea? Okay, just think for a moment. Maybe you're sipping on it right now. I am definitely sipping on a Moroccan mint tea. You know, I was on to Moroccan mint tea by a friend who said that, hey, she's just enjoying Moroccan mint tea, and I was like, I got to get some. I got to try it. I've never had that before. So it is now my second closest favorite tea. My first favorite tea is chai, just wonderful spiced chai. But what is your favorite kind of tea? Is it Earl Grey? Is it a mint tea? You know, Nana? Is it oolong, which will keep you up for hours, you know, that has the real kick to it. Is it spiced chai? Is it cinnamon tea? Is it Moroccan mint tea? Do you like it with a little bit of sugar? Do you like it with a little bit of honey? Do you add milk to it? You know, do you add your own spices to it? A little bit of cardamom, or like I said, with, you know, extra cinnamon or something. Well, apart from enjoying hot tea or cold tea, do you realize that each day over 15 million Americans drink tea? And recently I came across an updated article about, you know, 9 essential tea statistics to know in 2025. It's just a pretty cool article. And the article mentioned that tea is the second most popular drink in the world. And I'm sorry, I didn't mention what the most popular drink is, but tea is the second most popular drink throughout the whole world. And the Turkish people are considered to be the world champions in tea drinking and probably tea growing and brewing and all that stuff. So they hold that title proudly. And China itself, the country of China, holds 40% of the global tea market. So I'm sure you've heard the expression, you know, I wouldn't do that for all the tea in China. Well, that's a lot of tea, you know, 40% of the global tea market, considering all the places that tea is grown and shipped and sold. Now, according to the Tea Association of the United States of America, and yes, it is a legit site, the Tea Association of the United States of America, 159 million Americans are drinking tea every day. That's kind of an old statistic. That goes all the way back to 2022, but I guess, you know, with census and all that stuff and, you know, with the pandemic, they're still trying to play catch up with their numbers. Still, that's a pretty significant amount of people. 159 million Americans drink tea every day. And 48% of, let's say, the United States tea consumers drink tea at restaurants or other types of, let's say, food service locations. Okay, so in other words, 48% of the people are not staying home to drink tea, you know, just a shy under half. Now, only 15 to 20% of the tea that is drunk in United States households is hot tea. Okay, and I have to say, I love my iced tea. Okay, I can drink it 24/7, 365 days of the year, but every now and then I like a cup of hot tea, such as I'm sipping on here tonight, my Moroccan mint tea. And ironically, the United States is the second largest importer of tea in the world. So that says something there. So we Americans are drinking a lot of tea out there. Now, wholesale tea cost 50% more since the pandemic. So that went up in price. And yet still, after the pandemic, the most popular tea is still herbal tea. Probably because it just has, you know, like healing properties, or it just boosts the immune system and so forth. But you know, as you look at the history of drinking tea, it's kind of served as a bridge between different cultures for centuries. And in contrast to many other human traditions, it affects our health in a very positive way. You know, the world we live in currently shines an attractive light, let's say, on the benefits of drinking tea. Because, you know, the history of tea stretches back over thousands of years and covered vast regions such as the Silk Roads and all around the world from the 16th century, you know, to the present day. And these intercultural and interpersonal exchanges associated with tea have all been due to the activities of traders and missionaries and physicians along the Silk Roads. And along with these activities attributed to tea, there were also, you know, a tremendous exchange of ideas and goods and artisan objects that have made their way throughout the world. So, ironically, again, tea has been an interesting commodity that has brought cultures and people and customs and norms together all over a cup of tea. And I'm sure we can make the same case for coffee in and of itself. Well, I remember the first time being in India and sharing a cup of chai with the religious leaders I was visiting or local merchants. And I noticed that the chai that was being served was always carefully prepared. and it was served with respect and gratitude. You know, something that people really took pride in. And this was actually also the first time that I fully realized the meaning behind this greeting, Namaste. In other words, the light within me recognizes the light within you. And since then, I've been meditating on this saying and its meaning, and have come to appreciate a deeper level of insight and awareness. The light within me recognizes the light within you. And I've played around with it, you know, a little bit, not to hopefully take away its meaning, but to flip it around from time to time, excuse me, in the English language. And I've discovered that, you know, we can actually say, you know, Namaste, to the extent of, you know, I'm able to see the light within you, or the potential for you to realize that you are light, because I'm able to see the light within myself. So I'm able to see the light within you because I am first able to see the light within myself. And this is a tremendous potential for all beings to recognize and embrace the light within themselves as well as one another. Just think if we got really serious about that, wouldn't that change the world? I think it definitely would, certainly would. And engaging in this integrative meditation compels us sooner or later to stop asking for things, but instead we ask to have unforgiveness or bitterness or other negative attitudes to be removed. And this is so what I believe, that whatever is lying dormant in us, very positive things, can be unencumbered, come up and come out in very transformative, life-giving ways. And I think that's the power of sharing a cup of tea or coffee. And that there's a lot more to consider about the power of tea in this matter. Well, think about the moments that you shared a cup of tea with a friend or a family member. You know, there may have been times when you shared good news, or maybe you're just simply catching up from old news, or even just sitting down, not saying anything to one another, because the sorrow shared was beyond words. And yet, despite the fact that tea has this dynamic to bring people together, still, people feel alienated and alone. Because people have always struggled with sharing what's inside of themselves, often believing that they have nothing worthwhile to say, or I have nothing worthwhile to do, or I have nothing worthwhile to offer. And yet, looking inside one's teacup can teach us a lot about the need to look within ourselves and see the incredible life and light we have been given to share with others. And here's the dynamic of looking at the bottom of the teacup. Consider all the liquids that the cup has held. Hot tea, cold tea, tea with lemon, tea with sugar, tea with some milk, okay, or same thing with coffee. But, you know, the teacup or the coffee cup has this capacity to contain anything that's poured into it, just like us. I mean, we often think in isolated terms of this or that, or hot or cold or light or dark. But have we ever considered being able to hold extremes simultaneously? And what does this insight really provide for us as we consider ultimately who we are as this limitless and vast soul? Well, for example, many times we're tempted to isolate, you know, the utter horrors and pain and suffering throughout the world that we see. And, you know, we often wonder about, well, how can there be any joy in the lives of those who are dying or hungry or imprisoned or among people who do what they have to do in order to survive? I mean, how does anyone have the nerve to talk about joy in the face of unspeakable human sorrows that surround us, or the unspeakable on the relentless suffering and oppression that has ruptured another's soul? And yet, there it is. For anybody who has the courage to enter into human sorrows deeply, I mean, deep, deep, deeply, there is this greater awareness of joy and bliss Even when we're faced with utter ruin or dejection or annihilation, there are still memories that we can share. Not only of pain and sorrow, but also memories, you know, that are filled with laughter and smiles and hugs and joy. Not based solely on what we believe to be success or even a rational way out of Han, but it is an inner joy that comes from this resiliency of the human spirit, deeply rooted in the relationships with each other and ourselves and God or the divine. Because this joy that I'm speaking about, is fully alive in spite of the odds. So you see, the teacup of life, so to speak, is a teacup of joy, as much as it is at times a teacup of sorrow. It is a cup in which sorrow and joy and grief and healing, mourning and dancing are never separated. Henry Nouwen, in his book, Can You Drink This Cup?, writes, if the joys not be where the sorrows are, then this teacup of life would never be drinkable. So, and this is why before you take that first sip of tea or that first sip of coffee, pause for a second. Consider how you hold your cup. Before you take that first sip, look deeply and intently into that cup of tea and see the hidden joys and sorrows in your own life. And see the mystery of hope and resiliency that can be discovered in the times of your deep emotional wounds of Han. Well, I'd really love to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Howe. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. In the first half of tonight's show, I was talking about how often we are tempted to isolate ourselves and even to isolate the horrors and pain and suffering that we either have experienced ourselves or the what we have seen in the world, and that everything that we've been just shown things that we've walked through another person's pain or sorrows or horrors and so forth. And like this, we may wonder, you know, how can there be any joy in our lives, especially, you know, in the lives of others who are dying or hungry or imprisoned or among people who do what they have to do to survive? I mean, how does anybody have, you know, this the audacity or the nerve to talk about joy in the face of unspeakable human sorrows that surround us, or this unspeakable Han, that relentless suffering and oppression that often ruptures another person's soul? But therein lies this transformative truth, because for anybody who has the courage to enter into human sorrows deeply, there is this discovery of a greater awareness of joy and bliss, so that even when facing utter ruin or dejection or annihilation, there are moments of joy and happiness. The memories are still there, memories that we can share, not only of pain and sorrow, but also the memories that are filled with laughter and smiles and the hugs and the joy. You know, not based solely on what we believe to be success or even a rational way out of this rupture of the soul, out of Han, but it is an inner joy that comes from this resiliency of the human spirit that's deeply rooted in the relationships that we have with ourselves, each other, with God, and the divine. And this is a joy that is fully alive in spite of the odds. I mean, how many stories have you come across in your life where, in spite of the circumstances, a person can still sing? In spite of just overwhelming, horrific odds, a person can still smile. A person can still dance. Where do they get that from? They get that from the same place inside themselves, the human soul, the soul. To be able to stand there and say, you know what? These circumstances do not have the last word. Death does not have the last word, because when you fully realize yourself as an eternal and vast soul, what sorrow can you face? What can touch you? When you've tasted the light, what can steal that from you? So, you see, the teacup of life, you know, is this teacup of joy, very much as it is the teacup of sorrow. And it is a teacup in which this sorrow and joy, and as I said before, grief and healing and mourning and dancing are never separated. It's held in, you know, this continuum. We can hold what seems to be very dichotomous, vast opposing emotions in the same vessel. We can hold it within ourselves. Okay. Well, how many of you out there have ever played peekaboo with a baby? Okay. It may feel like I'm shifting gears here, but I'm not. It all fits together. So how many out there of you have ever played peekaboo with a baby? Okay. It just seems like one of those games that just comes natural to us. You know, it's funny, it's exciting. And I think we adults get more joy out of playing the game than babies do, you know, because we love their expressions, right? We love seeing their little faces as they jump with excitement and smile. And sometimes they laugh and they giggle or they coo. And, you know, if you're playing peekaboo, just a little caveat here, if you're playing peekaboo with a baby and the baby cries, well, then you're either doing it wrong or maybe you got stinky breath. Okay. At any rate, it is loads of fun. In fact, I have seen some of the most hard-hearted individuals sound like complete fools when they play peekaboo with baby. And so I'm convinced that playing peekaboo is a game that we never outgrow. You know, but as babies grow up, as they get into the toddler years, you know, boys become a little bit more sophisticated, and we might play Jack in the Box, you know, that little toy, that box with a little crank and the music, and then all of a sudden the monkey or the clown pops up, and we laugh, and we quickly learn when to anticipate the monkey or the clown popping up at just the right time. Okay, well, playing peekaboo helps children form mental images of objects, such as remembering where their favorite toy is when it's under a blanket or in a toy box. It may be out of sight, but it's not out of mind. They know where to find it. You know, it teaches the baby that, you know, we are still here too, even though they may not see our faces for a moment. So in other words, where did I go? Here I am. Well, ironically, we also never outgrow object permanence as we get older, because what begins in infancy becomes more and more abstract as, you know, we get older, such as maintaining a mental image of a loved one, even after their death. All we need to do is close our eyes and we can, put the person in a context and we can see their face. We have the form, the context, in order to see their faces and even remember their voices. And we even also can maybe smell their cologne or their perfume. Okay, we're very good at this. Okay, this object permanence. Again, just the marvel of our brains and memory and our minds. Well, let's take this concept of object permanence deeper into our relationships. Okay, and let's start off right at the top. Does God play peekaboo with us? Maybe not in a malicious way, that God hides from us and then jumps out and scares us, but perhaps in a modified version as a means for us to learn that perhaps in order to see and hear and touch God, we need to see and hear and feel with our hearts and our soul. Right? I mean, wasn't it Jesus who once said that the pure in heart shall see God? He did. And, let's also be honest here that most of the time we want God to be someone or something for us instead of allowing God to be who God is and realizing that it is we who need to be transformed in order to see and hear and touch God more clearly than before. And yet God goes way beyond our mind's interpretation of what we see and hear and smell and taste and touch. But have you ever noticed how God shows up in the most unlikely places in and through the most unlikely people? Come on, you've had these experiences. You know it's true. God often, I am convinced God loves to do that. God loves to show up in the most unlikely places, in and through the most unlikely people, especially when we're not looking for God in the first place. And all of a sudden, God's like, ah, here I am. Well, the first time this lesson was driven home to me was when I was having lunch with my college classmates a long time ago, but I'll never forget this story. And as we were sitting there talking and catching up with each other, the subject somehow came around to about listening to God in prayer, or how do we do this, or when do we do this, and so on and so forth. Well, when it was my turn to share my experiences, a student from Africa held up his hand, stopped me in the middle of my sentence, and told me I was doing it all wrong. And you know what, folks? I got offended. What do you mean I'm doing it all wrong? I've been talking to God all my life. And it was at that point, again, he held up his hand and he said, "That's just it, Jim. You do all the talking. You never take time to listen to God." And you know what? He was right. I didn't like it, but he was right. I mean, I did do all the talking. It seemed like from that moment on, my whole awareness shifted. And so instead of praying with my head, from my thoughts and my logic, I now started to pray from my heart and ultimately from that soul connection that I have with God. Because in fact, I started to see and hear all of the layers of woundedness in my life. Again, not in a malicious way that God brought these to my attention, but rather I believe that I was being shown all these things that needed to be healed. All those psychological, emotional, and spiritual wounds that clouded my sight and sound of seeing and hearing the Spirit of God more clearly in my relationships. Well, I remember one time Mother Teresa was once asked in an interview, dear Mother, what do you say to God during your prayer time? To which she replied, "Nothing. I listen." Well, okay. Well, what does God say to you? Nothing. God listens. And what a difference that made. Because when I prayed with my heart and my soul, I quickly discovered that God is doing the exact same thing. It's that mutual depth of meditation and prayer that is this language of the soul. Because it's being in tune with God on that soul level in which we discover that words are not necessary. And this is why sharing a cup of tea or a cup of coffee with somebody and looking into the cup, sometimes words are not necessary. There's some very powerful healing moments that can occur as we're sipping on a favorite cup of tea or a cup of coffee. And you might say that there are times when words get in the way. And this is true in our relationships with each other. You know, there is tremendous potential for all beings to recognize and embrace the light within themselves as well as one another. And engaging in this integrative meditation definitely compels us sooner or later to stop asking to receive things and instead, we ask for all of the unforgiveness and all of the bitterness and all of the other negative attitudes in us to be removed. And this is so that what is lying dormant in us can come to the surface and come out in very life-giving ways. Again, it's this transformation. Well, you know, I love to talk about India. It's like a second home to me, even though I've only been there four times. It's just, I got a connection there. I know I do. And I have lots of friends over there and just made friends with many teachers and gurus and just the saints and so forth. And I've been to India four times in my life. And each time I learn something new about myself and others and exactly where and when God shows up. Again. As I said before, God loves to show up in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people. And, you know, I already know a few simple words and phrases of Hindi, but it was connecting to others on a soul level in a very genuine, authentic, powerful way that allowed us to truly communicate from who we are. You know, from simple gestures of, you know, folding our hands with a gentle bow and greeting each other by saying namaste, to giving a cup of tea, or I should say to being given a cup of tea from an elderly woman who wore her hardened life on her hands and on her face. Heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul connection is certainly where God shows up. And again, this was clearly the lesson I learned from my last trip to India back in December of 2019. And like I said, this being my fourth trip, I had to go a little bit deeper in my understanding. It's like, okay, I'm not a tourist. I've been to all the touristy spots, you know, my first time over there. But I wanted to do more intentional soul-related experiences that I have not done so much before. Well, little did I know that when we pray a prayer like that, God says, okay, you want to see more of me? I first need you to stop, be quiet, and pay attention to the ordinariness around you. Now, I'll be the first one to admit, I'm a pretty big guy, and so it's hard for me not to stand out in a crowd. So to go through India unnoticed, it's not going to happen. Okay, because people would certainly look and wonder, what in the world is this dude doing here? But it became more about a random person's desire to be a blessing to me that taught me to not only be more intent in looking for God in ordinary acts of kindness, but also this is exactly where the extraordinariness of God shows up. I was very fortunate to visit Babaji's cave in Kolkachina in the Himalayas. If you don't know where that is, you can Google that, the very sacred spot where Babaji lived. And a lot of people make pilgrimages there. And it's like, this time I want to visit that cave in the Himalayas. And so I had to hire a guide and so forth. And I went up on the mountain and very profound effect. And when I came down from the mountain with the guide, an old woman who lived with her son and daughter in a very humble dwelling I mean, very, very humble dwelling, gave me a cup of chai and gestured for me to sit down. I mean, maybe she thought I was going to fall down. I don't know. But at any rate, I was grateful for that chair and that cup of chai. And I seen the kindness in her eyes as she handed me this tea, and that touched my soul. And another time I visited Vatsalya Gram Ashram in Vrindavan, a place where Krishna, the birthplace of Krishna, and they were offering free cataract surgeries for people in the town, totally free. If you have cataracts, come on certain days, and the doctors would donate their time, anesthesiologists, just the whole medical crews from all over the world would come. And kind of interesting, they performed over 300 surgeries just in a few days. And as I walked around this ashram, just marveling at what I had seen, back in the medical facility, I also saw families living in tents and makeshift shelters, all just to be close to their loved ones who were having the surgery that week. And as I was walking around, the families and children would invite me to sit with them and have tea and share a simple snack. And they were all filled with smiles and gratitude to share what they had with a stranger. Or were we really strangers? I'm not so sure about that. I think, something else was going on there. And I wasn't sure who was blessed the most, me or them. Because even though we didn't speak each other's language, we did share this soul-to-soul connection. And I also visited the children's ashram, who also lived at Vatsalya Gram in Vrindavan, India. And knowing that kids in general love music, I took my Native American flute with me, the one that you hear at the beginning and the end of these broadcasts, and I played for them. And I visited with them for about an hour each day. And then I would play, and they would return, a blessing to me by singing for me, and just beautiful, angelic voices they had. And one day I visited a house where there were mentally challenged kids. That's where they lived. And again, my flute, and as I played, their eyes widened and their toothy smiles were visible. And at one point, as I was playing, I heard a young boy who must have been anywhere from like 8 or 9 years old, who was born without his sight. He started to hum along and sing along with the tune I was playing. And the grandmothers and the mothers and the aunties who were the caretakers of these children, they were all astonished. I mean, their mouths just dropped open. And I was told later through an interpreter that this particular boy had never sung before. Like I said, who blessed who that day? See, everyday examples of where God shows up, giving a cup of cold water, or giving a cup of tea, kind word, a smile, even sitting, just simply sitting with another in silence. Again, what did Jesus remind us? When you've done it to the least of these, it's as if you have done it to me. Well, when we're able to share a cup of tea that contains all of our life experiences with another, and they do the same with us, I imagine that this makes heaven, all of heaven, start doing backflips. They just cannot contain the joy that's going on in heaven. But, God isn't asking anything difficult from us. Visiting the sick, visiting those who are imprisoned, giving water, feeding. These are all things that we are capable of doing, but what makes these ordinary acts of kindness transformational is that God shows up, and that's when it becomes extraordinary. Grace-filled moments, teachable moments, life-changing moments. As we minister to another in the physical sense, we also minister to others in the spiritual sense. Why do we make it harder and more complicated than what it needs to be? It's almost as if God says to us, you do what you can do, I'll take care of the rest. So if we ever want to see, extraordinary grace or the extraordinariness of God, pay attention to the ordinariness of life. See the extraordinariness of God in the ordinary. It's this tangible holiness, as it were, as we pay attention to how and when and where and in whom God shows up. It certainly doesn't take a lot of effort on our part to see and hear the pain of others. And sometimes we don't have to look any further than within our own families or with our own communities. Pain, grief, loss, misery, et cetera, is something we all have in common, regardless of race, creed, color, language barriers, or social distancing. But we also have in common our strength, our humanity, our love, our perseverance, our grace. We hold both in this shared cup of humanity. And just like a cup can hold something hot like coffee or something cold like iced tea, when that's shared with another person at just the right time, it could just be the difference that a person needs to be reminded that they're not alone in this world. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for joining me this evening, and I look forward to sharing another hour with you in 2 weeks. So in the meantime, everybody, let's ask that God holds all of us in the palm of God's hands. Everybody be safe. Take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.